podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Cole Palmer.
It is completely nonsensical if I'm in a position of benching someone that good to be going, I'm going to take a minus four for Ross Barkley.
Hello everybody, welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Sitch.
My name's James. Hello everybody, hope you had a good weekend.
Yeah, man. Yeah, let's see.
How was your FPL weekend? You actually get a green arrow for a change, did you?
I got a green arrow. First time in a long time, James. In
about 6 months, isn't it?
Nah, it hasn't been as long as that. I'm just looking at what time you went 2-1 up. 80 minutes. Both of our teams leaving it late at the weekend. We're late.
You left it very, very late.
Lastminute.com.
Nico, do us a favour. Close them doors, please, mate.
Thanks, hadn't. Mate. The breeze is coming. I hadn't kept massively up to date on Friday with what was going on. So my transfer decision-making was really revolving around what you were doing and what you'd said on the team news stream and a little bit on the morning stream. I had two injuries, Richarlison, which came from nowhere. I didn't see that coming. Obviously, he's out for a month or something.
Well, he reckons he might be back this week, but I think he's chatting nonsense.
Okay, and Huang was red flagged.
He's now out for 6 weeks.
Right, so obviously I had two transfer problems, two flags there. Like, forward planning for 29, fine. Like, Richarlison was useful to me. Quang wasn't so much. So it was straightforward. I had money in the bank. If you could buy two players for Huang and Richarlison, who would you buy?
What, last week gone?
Yeah, just in general. It's two midfielders you could buy.
It depends what your plan is. What are you doing for 29?
I'm working through.
You're working through? I probably would have bought Bowen this week, and I'd have bought Son.
I bought Son, but I also bought Saka.
Oh, fair enough.
Because I didn't own Saka. So I feel like Saka and Son is basically like buying the two of the better midfielders in the game. No brainer, just get it done. So I took a hit to get it done and worked out okay. So Keller in goal, 9-pointer, which looked tidy
two saves as well.
Yeah, it was mad to get maximum bonus. So the fact that he outscored Dubravka is more important for me than he outscored Areola. Because had I not made the Dubravka to Kelleher move when Alisson picked up the injury, I would have played Dubravka this week, not
So you feel like you're Kelleher. 2 points up?
Yeah, on Dubravka for sure. Because
winning,
I made the
move. Small wins.
Yeah, you've got to take them when you can get them, right? because I did have a Newcastle defender.
not anymore, you
Kieran
don't.
Kieran Trippier. Well, we don't know yet, do we?
He's gone off just before 60, 52 minutes or something, with a potential calf problem.
Again, that would have been a clean sheet. Moreno, he is the defensive version of a Darwin Nunez or something, right?
Okay.
He's the gift that always feels close to giving and actually doesn't at all. So only a one-pointer off Moreno.
And what's wrong with you? The left-back scored?
The wrong one.
Just the other one.
The wrong one. But I had returns pretty much everywhere else. Palmer and Alvarez were assists. Foden, Haaland, Captain Watkins and Son returned. So 67 minus 4 is 63. But I got two to go. Gabriel and Saka. Saka's ownership's ridiculous.
Saka's a loser in your book, yeah.
So it doesn't make a difference. Gabriel is at 27%. So
it's way more than that in terms of lives. 55 to 60, I think, or so, roughly. So depending on where your rank is.
Of course. I should end up 70 points, 75 points. It could be obviously crazy if Saka goes off, right?
So you're on 63 net, are you?
Yeah. So what's ownership around me? 43%.
For Gabriel. Saka's what for you? Where are you?
110.
Yeah, Saka's like 113 where I am, I think.
Right.
Gabriel's more where I am as well. Okay. I'd have to check it.
Yeah, sure. But no, yeah, just nice to have a green arrow. And also, for a change, I feel like I'm going back towards tried and trusted players rather than trying to find freaky players. When I was buying Son and Saka, I was like, I'm just buying regular steady eddies that chip away week in, week out consistently rather than looking for your
Thomas Suchek's
and flashing the pans and stuff like that, right? So, yeah.
So how many points on your bench, boss?
25 this week. painful, right? But there's not a single player I would have played, so it kind of makes no difference. People get upset about points on their bench.
I'd rather have loads on the bench than none than on the
none.
Bench. Yeah,
do you know what I mean, right?
Because your value in these players is going to be holding and stuff.
Doughty, yeah. Tidy, 5 points. Socek, super finish, 7 points, and Areola's 13-pointer.
I'm not suggesting you should have bench boosted that. Such no way.
No way. But it's just nice that they've returned, you know. So yeah, 25 points on the bench, 67 minus 4 in the team. As it stands, gone up to 1.1 million. Yeah, just is what it is.
Okay, boss, keep firing. We can't have you outside the top million. It's been another decent week for me as well. I'm on 69, technically. It will show 64 on your screen. Obviously, Doughty off the bench for Porro. For me, takes it up
to go as me?
64 to 69. Yes, I've got Saka and Gabriel to go tonight. So it could get worse. It could also get better. But it probably needs... That's about Arsenal clean sheet and a Saka blank might be a little bit better. But I'm up to about 115K. I've had a good couple of weeks. These midfielders are doing me great at the moment. So Foden 15 yesterday. Did you watch the game? Oh my God, it was phenomenal. Bowen 5, Leon Bailey 4.
From what
4.
I was listening to, they were dominating.
Yeah, they were great. We'll talk about it. Ollie Watkins 13, Captain Haaland obviously the late goal. So I'd bought Son. That was pretty straightforward transfer for Jota for me, right? My idea with Jota was to hold to have the information for now. With the rumours circulating about Richarlison, I moved for Son actually on Thursday night. That was clear as day for me. I decided I was going to go Son anyway. With Richarlison rumoured to be out at that point, it was like, this is no doubt now he's going to play through the middle. And I knew he was going to play through the middle because I'd seen I don't want him back. And try Werner through the middle late on against Wolves, and this was just a no-go zone. At that point, I'd concluded my other defensive transfer was going to be Destiny Udogi.
Yep.
Bearing in mind, obviously, working to 2029. But the longer I thought about it on Friday, the more I became put off by the idea that I couldn't get to Madison. Diogo Dalot was the player I'd sold. Was obviously useless for me this week, although in hindsight I should have just left it and it would have been a better player for me to have this week at home to Everton. Became useless for me once it was confirmed United wouldn't play in game week 29. So I went back on your doggy transfer the more I thought about it and I bought, you all know who I bought, right? I bought fucking Senna side, didn't I? Which, here's the good news, folks. He didn't get booked. Yeah, he's, for those hoping on Senna side, look, he's gone off after, 10 minutes with a hamstring problem. It's more likely he doesn't play again this season than rocks up in the next 2 weeks, I would suggest. So with him, presumably red flagged, Porro, I don't really know where I stand for this weekend. Pau Torres, God knows if he plays or he doesn't play, and do I want to play him against Tottenham anyway? Not really. I possibly need to make another defensive transfer, which is going to be a real headache this week. It might be it becomes Udogi again, but it's almost definitely going to be a -4 because I'm going to buy Solanke for Alvarez, right?
You are, yeah?
Almost definitely. Once I've done that, he didn't look great yesterday, but I'm not overly concerned about it. I just think the two home fixtures are just too good to ignore. Once I've done that, I've got a massive benching headache. Which is, I'm probably benching Foden, despite yesterday, away to Liverpool. And then you think, oh, what do I want to do? -4s for Barclays and shit like that. When I got Saka at home to Brentford, Bailey at home to Tottenham, Son at Villa and Bowen at home to Burnley. And I don't really need to, do I? I'm Phil Foden, first sub, and I think to have -4s there. No, it's fixture problem, which I've got defensively. But I also don't want to take a -4 for a defender. Because unless it's Kerkez or, say, Zibanyi, I don't actually think whoever I take a -4 for gives me gains. Now, you can look at it and say, well, it'll fix you up better with the extra fixture for 29. But with me, what I've looked at now is highly likely it's going to be wildcard 31. And I've got a bit obsessed now where I can get a team in game week 30 that's all got home fixtures.
Yep.
So Udogi, I really like from that as well. It's not now so much. It's 29, sure, although Fulham in a good spot at the moment. 30 then at home to Luton. But then I also think, oh, sod it, James. You just played Doughty at Tottenham in game week 30. Like, is it the worst thing in the world? They could lose 4-1 and pop up with an attacking return. Like, he's got a 5-pointer at the weekend stuff. So, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do defensively. I think if there's more update on Lloyd Kelly and his absence, if he's going to be out till say mid-April or something, then I feel quite comfortable, I think, to punt Kerkez, and I think there's upside. But then that don't help me for 29. So yeah. I think it's looking more and more likely I'm probably just going to be 9 or 10 in game at 29 rather than I kind of was pathed to have 11.
Yeah, I'm similar to you. The thing is, for me this week, obviously the sensible choice would be to go and buy a double game week player if I'm making a transfer. I've taken hits in the last 2 weeks. I want to avoid it this week. My first sub this week won't be as good as yours. So I've got Thomas Socek there and Tripp's a second sub. But look, Areola, Burnley at home, Tottenham at home, Brentford at home for Gabriel Moreno is fine. Doughty with a double, Saka, Palmer, Foden, Son, Haaland, Watkins, Alvarez as it stands. I'm going to sell Alvarez this week. And I think I'm going to buy Morris, you know.
Go on, elaborate. I don't hate this. Go on.
Over Solanke.
Yep.
I know the Sheffield United at home game for Bournemouth looks good, but I think Palace away for Luton. I think Luton will cause them trouble. And then they play each other. And again, I think Luton will cause them trouble. And look, Senesi could be out now as well.
Yeah, it's an influence, yeah.
It's a cheaper price point. And most importantly, it gives me a player for game week 29, which I don't have enough of right now. So I think I might go Kyle Morris, you know. The problem with that is that you've got to armband him, right? With a double game week and being a striker, I've got to armband him, surely. But then I think back to when...
It's game week 7 all over again.
didn't he do all right? Didn't he score 10 points in the
double
earlier in the season?
Yeah,
and Clayton, I remember, captained him then and stuff. And he's been in good form.
He has.
He's been in good form. Like, he's the fifth highest scoring striker or something, I'm sure. He's only like 20 points behind Solanke.
Despite he obviously had a good period where he wasn't playing in the team as well.
Exactly. So I think he's points per match 4.2. Not bad for a 5.1 million striker. You take 4.2 average.
No, it's not terrible. What I would say about him is if you get him, I think he'll return something in the double. I'd be surprised if he blanked twice.
Yeah, 8 goals, 6 assists this season so far. It's pretty decent. And his run in more recent times, despite they've been losing a lot of games, he's been doing okay. And I think...
He's got four in the last five?
Yeah, I think they'll see both these games, Palace away and Bournemouth away, as an opportunity to get some points.
Yeah, it's a massive week for them because if it goes badly for them, then it's looking really rough for them.
Yeah. What's the worst that can happen? Solanke goes off, my shit season gets shitter. What's the best that can happen? Morris goes off, season gets recovered a little bit. I might get back inside the top half a million. So as it stands at the moment, I'm looking at Morris over Solanke and doing something a little bit different.
Do you want something else that's different is to get both?
But then I've got to sell Watkins.
No, you don't have to sell Watkins.
You want me to sell the robot? I'm not selling the robot.
I'm seeing people talking about this.
I'm not doing it.
Haaland to Morris. Which, first thing, if you do make that transfer, and I'm not saying it's terrible because there's definitely theory behind it, do go and have a look at yourself in the mirror before you do it, is all I would suggest. The reason I can see people are thinking about it is it's obvious. It's the double now and Haaland goes to Liverpool. And let's be honest, City do normally wet the bed when they go to Anfield. And I suspect a lot of Liverpool's key players will probably be back for the game on Sunday. I think if you offered City fans a point now, they'd probably take it. These are the sort of games where you certainly can take Haaland on. There's no doubt about that. So Morris in for the double. Then the extra fixture in 29 at home to Forest is good as well.
Yeah.
Reverse it in game week 30. Just leave the money in the bank or move it to something else. For me, I think the key thing that blocks the idea on it is one is value. So I bought Haaland at 13.9, he's now 14.5. So it's a brain damage to try and get him back. But also, more importantly, it's the fact that I've got to get him back. That's what bothers me most here. It's okay, I can sell him, but in game week 30, it's like, oh, I've got to get him back. And I might want to force Salah, and I might want to force Palmer. Do you know what I mean? And I ain't got the other two.
I'm with you. I bought him at 13.9. I'd sell him at 14.2. I'm not going to find that money. I'd rather keep the money for something else.
For me, it's more than the value. It's more about the hat. I would feel it necessary to buy him back as well, I think.
Yeah, it's not for me right now.
It's two transfers. Two transfers can be used somewhere else.
You're going Villa on Sunday?
Yeah, I'm going. And to be honest,
just you and your dad?
No, Ricky's coming as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. No, Ricky's wasn't actually thinking about Ricky, young man. This Sunday, just letting everybody know, it's predominantly a public service announcement for people in England or Britain. It's Mothering Sunday. It's Mother's Day. And obviously, Liverpool Man City at 3:45. My lot are playing at 2. You're playing at 1. There'll be a lot of brunches. Let's go out in the morning, Mum, because I've got a busy afternoon of football ahead. I was just looking at the time and I'm thinking, I want to watch Liverpool City, so I need to get all the Mother's Day stuff.
You know what
in
I
the
said
morning.
To my mum, didn't you? See you Saturday.
Saturday nights. Let's do Mother's Day on Saturday.
You know what I said to my wife? Your son will be there.
Yeah. I'm not your son. Honestly, it's looking like a tasty afternoon of football.
Yes, to be honest.
But how are you getting back trained? So you're going to... How are you going to watch Liverpool City on rewind later? Switch off everything on flight mode and all that?
If anyone wants to find me, I'll be somewhere near Birmingham New Street hanging around watching Liverpool Man City because I am not missing that.
And then you've got to train later?
Yeah, we'll go back and watch the game in Birmingham and then get the train after.
I'm not missing
Liverpool against City. Sod that.
Tied.
My defensive transfer, by the way, just mentioned on Villa Tottenham. Obviously, Porro's fit. Like, I almost can't justify taking a hit when I can
100%.
I can just play Doughty with a double, Gabriel at home to Brentford, and then Porro for the offensive stuff at Villa. Like, I don't know if I don't know how to justify it. And then if Porro, Torres, and Doughty are all available for 29, I've got 3 in place. I'm just focus on a couple of offensive transfers, like I said, to get me to 9 or 10 for 29. That's the plan.
Okie dokie. Well, I think we just hold fire for a little bit and kind of wait. We've got it.
Solanke, I think his price is locked, by the way. I think it's locked to about Wednesday, according to FPL statistics. I think Wednesday nights, you don't need to rush to go there either. I think take a little bit more information. Information way more important than the earlies, we keep saying it. Although, Solanke's one, if he'd have been going up in price last night and Alvarez had been going down, I probably would have chanced that one to go early because he's a certainty for me to buy this week and he's a certainty for me to captain as well.
Yep, understandable. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus Morris 7. I think I'll get to 8 or 9 in 29 and just deal with it. I'll probably get Bowen for...
if I'd have gone Udogie rather than Senesi, I'd be comfortably on for 11 in 29. But as I often say, and those I think on my stream on Friday night were getting a bit sick of me, it's not the how many, it's the who.
It is indeed.
But, oh, I can have 11, James, but I don't have Watkins, I don't have Son, I don't have Tony. Great, you're better off having 7 and having those guys probably.
Nice.
Although Tony, we think might have got a knock at the end of the Chelsea game. It's not going to matter for this week, so you'll get some info anyway, but he was reportedly limping at the end. Although I noticed he wasn't limping at the Brit Awards on Saturday night. Did you see his jacket he was wearing?
No.
I tell you what, you wouldn't want to have put your keys in that jacket, mate. The amount of pockets he had, you'd never find your keys, mate.
Okay. He's probably got keyless entry. Let's talk about some of these games. I found myself on Saturday agreeing with Jurgen Klopp for a change.
Because?
There's no 12:30 kickoff, and I don't like 12:30s because I do bits and pieces on a Saturday morning in my routine. I always look at my phone at 11:15 and think...
I've missed deadline.
Maybe, possibly. But the days recently, there's been no 12:30s. When I look at it and it says 1:30, I'm like, yes.
That's sorry, mate, result. 11 o'clock deadline this week.
Yeah, I know, but hopefully be done and dusted before it. So, yeah, we started at 3 o'clock with Brentford 2, Chelsea 2. I don't know what to make of Chelsea now.
I was waiting for you in your line, mate.
I don't know what to make of them now. I'm not going down the controversial statements of Gary Neville calling them bottle jobs or whatever it is. But you do think, like, they're 2-0 up at halftime. They've got to be able to see out that game, surely, if they've got any aspirations to be...
They were 2-1 up.
Was it 2-1 at halftime?
No, they were 1-0 up at halftime, and then they equalised quite late on.
Yeah. Sorry, you're right. They were winning at halftime, which is when Thomas Frank was obviously moaning about the fans. I did like that, though, seeing the fans boo, because it made me think that it's not just my fans that are all idiots. No. How can you be a Brentford fan and boo at halftime when you're just only 1-0 down?
Told you, 98% of football fans are idiots.
I was absolute agreement. Like, I think he should call them out for being idiots. And even like at my place when they boo at halftime and stuff, he's just like,
For clubs like Brentford, careful what you wish for would be my advice.
Completely.
On that,
like, it don't make sense. And then look at it. You're 2-1 up, and then obviously, yeah, 2-2 at the end. But
So Chelsea played a back three. This was legitimate back three. It wasn't the confusion early season. This was, and I went back and watched the start of the game, a clear back three with Chalobah going in between Disasai and Colwell. It meant Gusto and Chilwell played as wingbacks. I think Gusto and Palmer are the only Chelsea players that you would remotely want to go near at the moment. What I would say is for those three hitting in 29, it's not a terrible move to go one of those two if you haven't got Newcastle at home, then obviously blank, and then you walk into Burnley at home in 30. And if you're carrying further along, you know there's going to be double game weeks further down the line. And they're one of the best teams for fixtures from game week 30 onwards to the rest of the season. So the problem with Gusto is Reece James, isn't it? Should we be worried about Reece James or not? I feel like it would just be one week and it'd be like, he's back in training. And then, but then it's probably another three games before he starts or so, probably.
And then he'll play two and then he'll be out for the rest of the season.
Probably. I mean Gusto is not improbable for me this week. If I don't want to go near that Bournemouth problem, if I don't want anyone that's playing in 29, and I go, well, actually, 30 is part priority for me, get Gusto for now and 30.
When did you sell him? Only 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
It wasn't long.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
But I didn't envisage this. I think he's a great player. He really impresses me every time I watch him, actually. He's been one of Chelsea's standout performers along with Cole Palmer this season. I think Palmer captaincy might even be semi-popular in game week 30 with Burnley at home and obviously City playing Arsenal. If Mo's not back for Brighton at home or people can't get there, I think a few would like to look at Palmer. Son's got Luton at home, so you might get a bit more split in game week 30 as well. Whether that back three sticks or not, I'm not sure. Pochettino said that basically he can't rotate the midfield three at the moment, Caicedo, Fernandes and Gallagher. And it'd obviously been a difficult week for them. He knew Brentford was going to play a midfield three in there, obviously, and he wanted to give them a bit more protection behind. That's what he said. It is ironic they've finally played a back three and Thiago Silva isn't in the team, because that would be the most suitable solution for some of Thiago Silva's issues as well. For Brentford, good recovery for them, actually, right? They also obviously played a back three. Vissa came in for Maupay. Terrific goal with his third overhead kick attempts of the game, as highlighted on Match of the Day. I think the interesting takeaway one for FPL managers is probably Reguilón. Oh, I want a -4 for a defender, Suj, who plays in 29. Let's get Reguilón. Oh, Arsenal away. Okay, maybe let's let that wait a week or so. But well,
this is an interesting one with them with Arsenal away.
You ain't buying any of that this week.
No. How would you feel about captaining an Arsenal player against Brentford? Because we always talk about them being difficult, right? But they've conceded 2 at Chelsea, 4 against us. Right, City, they only conceded 1, but they were bad that game. Liverpool, they conceded 4. They kept a clean sheet against Wolves, but prior to that, conceded 3 against City, 3 against Tottenham, 2 against Forest. Like, they're conceding 2s and 3s in almost every game, with a few 4s sprinkled in there. They're defensively just not at it anymore. Like, you don't feel like you can. They're going to grind out a 1-0 or make it difficult. Arsenal away, for them defensively, looks horrible.
So I'll be captaining Solanke, as long as I buy him. If he's injured for whatever reason, I probably am going down the Morris route myself, and okay, I probably would captain Morris.
Yeah.
Of the single game week players, I would captain Saka this week.
And there will be people that don't have the
Saka will... What it will do to Reguilón isn't worth thinking about. Because there's a flip of it. So from a fantasy perspective, it doesn't particularly matter. Because if you want Reguilón for 29, he's ended up having 3 efforts in the box at the weekend, including one that was blocked that led to the other wing-back, Roslev's goal. Roslev is a little less secure in the team. So definitely Reguilón over Roslev. He's also hit the post with a header. He was actually pretty unlucky with that Reguilón as well. So he's the defensive one to go to at the moment with no Pinnock, no me. There's that. It's a bit rough defensively. But positioning-wise, for 29, I imagine you'll be in the majority of free hit teams in game with 29, Sergio Reguilón. So he might come onto radar for me, but defensively, his concentration is so bad.
Yeah.
Saka will... All Saka's got to do is give the give and go and in behind, and Reguilón's done.
Dangerous, yeah.
So, yeah, I wouldn't expect him to get anything at Arsenal at the weekend. As said, keep an eye out for potential news on Tony. Suppose he wasn't limping at these Brit Awards. No, I didn't watch it. But he was limping towards the end of the Chelsea game. I think from the back line, Zanka, Gier, Collins will stay as the back three, but I wouldn't make a case to buy any of that over Reguilón the moment. And again, it's probably not this week. It's the week after. I think it's a good result for Brentford with the issues they've got injury-wise. Henry, Mead, De Silva out for the season now. Obviously still without the likes of Bumo, Hickey, Sade, Pinnock. None of them going to be back available, we don't think, before game week 29 comes around. So I think the Brentford interest will be purely Flecken, Reguilón, Tony. I think Vissam will pay now is a little bit blurred as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
I wouldn't be going
I think if you wanted to enable him forward at that kind of value, Vissa admitted he's a bit more.
Cota Morris.
Well, Muniz as well at Fulham.
Doesn't make sense.
So, no, Chelsea interest would only be Gusto and Palmer. Big game for them Monday night against Newcastle. I still, even though they're bottom half, I still think Chelsea and Newcastle's run-ins are so good and Villa and Newcastle's is so bad. I don't want to rule either of them out for challenging for. I don't think fourth. I won't catch Villa be too much, but catching Tottenham, not impossible.
West Ham 3, well, Everton 1, West Ham 3, I should say. Home team first. So 7 goals in the week for West Ham will suddenly start getting a bit of interest for people because they do play in 29. And we've got Burnley at home as the fixture this week, which I think we should do well in as well. So definitely will pick up the attention of a few people, but it wasn't a straightforward win. I think, to be honest, on stats-wise, you would say that Everton had more opportunities and more chances, but the quality wasn't particularly there, and West Ham still carried a threat throughout the game. I feel like we would feel a draw was fair, and Everton might think they've lost an opportunity to win a game of football. But they didn't do enough in front of goal to justify winning the game, in my opinion. They do have a real problem with scoring goals, Everton. And I don't think Beto is the solution to that problem, necessarily. But then nor is Calvert-Lewin, so I don't know what they're going to do.
So Everton have got, what, 3 home league wins this season?
Okay.
It's 7 defeats. In those 7 home league defeats, they have missed 22 big chances.
Wow.
It's more than 3 a game missed. In Crazy. Those 7 games, that includes 4 against yourselves at the weekend. That also includes a 0 in there against Arsenal.
It's 1 penalty in that, right?
4 against Fulham, 5 against Wolves, 5 against Luton, 3 against Manchester United, 1 against Man City, 4 against West Ham. That's courtesy of EFC Stato, retweeted by our Everton correspondent, Spirit Blues. So, still remain convinced that they'll be all right. But I get the... It's a fine line. Like if you're a season ticket holder at Goodison Park and you're going every week, despite the fact we know that without the points deduction, they'd be higher in the table, 3 home wins is not good enough, is it? They're actually out of trouble because of their away results, which is kind of 8th, 9th, I think, best away record this season. That home record, he's shite, mate.
That's bad.
He's shite.
After 75 minutes, I did think we're going to win the game.
But
despite not being dominant, I thought we're going to break away, we're going to nick this 2-1, and we're going to walk away happy despite not really.
You offer 4 big chances. I mean, even just remove the Beto penalty, the chance that Harrison put on the plate for McNeil, which went straight into Areola's body, and that was at 1-0 already, wasn't it, I think? Like, that should be 2-0, it's game over, you can't believe that's not gone in. So I think it's one that could easily flip the other way, as it does for FPL managers
on
with
the flip side,
Areola.
Like, West Ham had chances as well. It wasn't like we didn't carry any goal threat all of a sudden, and we've put 3 away. Okay, 2 late goals, understandable, but the difference with Paqueta makes such a change.
We told you.
He's just that calm nature and the ability to pick out a ball and just doesn't lose it. He's a hell of a player. Alvarez had a phenomenal game as well. He's really proved to be a really good signing. And Ward-Prowse played well as well. It was an all right performance. Kudus is a funny one. I don't know. He's not a very clean dribbler. I don't know how to describe it. I always think when he's dribbling, at any moment, he doesn't feel like he either has the ball in control or it looks like he's going to lose it. But he never does. He always comes out of any challenge with the ball. And I don't understand why, because I always think he's going to lose
it. Because he goes in zigzags a bit.
Yeah, he ducks in this way and that way. And I'm like, the ball's too... It's not like... You know Messi? When Messi dribbles, the ball is glued to his feet.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Yeah, the ball is glued to his feet. It does... The ball probably doesn't go further than a dustbin lid away from his feet. It's like literally stuck there. With Kudus, the ball is like everywhere, but he never loses it.
Did you see the one of Messi? I think it was either last week or the week before, and admittedly it's in the MLS. But he was dribbling, and he, you know, he kind of cuts in on his left. He's got to the edge of the area, and he's thought, I could have a shot. There's an opposing player lying prone right in front of him, injured. And he scoops the ball over his head, like to the perfect trajectory, and just gets it, jumps over him, gets it on the other side, and keeps going.
Oh, he's too good.
Not Kudus.
He's too good. No, but Kudus got years ahead.
Who would you buy? Bowen, Kudus, or Paquetá if you were buying? Because it's definitely going to be interest.
It wouldn't be Paquetá. I don't think it'd be Paquetá, unless budget was a problem. But I don't think he's that much cheaper than Kudus, to be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. I'll recommend Bowen and Kudus will go off. Or I'll recommend Kudus and Bowen will go off. It really is that tight. Kudus was having shots. They're both involved in the game. Bowen drops in deep sometimes because Ward-Prowse is the one who's doing the pressing even further ahead of him sometimes. At the end of the game, Paquetá was playing in the middle. Kudus was on the left. Bowen was on the right. Then Paquetá comes off for Antonio to play in the middle. Choose your poison. Like, honestly, it really is as good as anyone can go off in any given game. It's hard between Kudus and Bowen. I wouldn't go Paquetá, but it's so hard in any given game. They carry a very similar threat.
Yeah, I think it's Bowen over Kudus.
He's
first.
Talisman. So if money, no objects, I would buy Bowen. But that doesn't mean you can then, you know, oh, well, Kudus outscored Bowen and you said Bowen. But this is it.
It's like, no. It's this one game, isn't it?
Who would you pick? Like, Haaland or KDB, but either one could pop off in a game, right?
Obviously, the added benefit, of course, is the fixture in 29. It's two home games for West Ham as well, right? So, what would you, if you were going into this week and you want to buy a midfielder, what are you going to do? You're going to buy like a Bowen or are you going to buy like a Ross Barkley?
Bowen, all day long.
Yes, I completely agree with that.
You've got to think, like, we've just come off the back of two wins. Confidence now is suddenly right, okay. We've got away with it a little bit at Everton and come away with 3 points where it could have been one. We've beaten Brentford at home. Now is a game that we're expected to win. Burnley at home, in front of the home crowd. I think it will be a good vibe. I think, yeah, we should be looking to win that 2 or 3.
Here's an interesting dilemma for someone like me, because I might end up taking a hit, which would part be getting Kudus in 29. As an example, I already own Bowen. But then psychology, you think, well, if I'm going to do that, get him now for Burnley at home, right? But then I do it now, and then I'm benching instead on... I'm probably selling Foden, and then what? I'm benching the likes of Bailey instead, who I think's got the fourth best... He might be second best in home games, possibly, in terms of per start, maybe, for returns. So, but you want to do it now, don't you? Yep. I'm almost willing an injury
to force you to do it.
In a weird way, because you want to do it now, I think.
Yeah, see, I'm in a position with Saka. Can't sell this week. Foden, not selling. Son, not selling. Palmer, I need him before and after 29. And then I've got Thomas Soucek. I'm not going sideways Soucek to Bowen for 29.
So what West Ham do you think you'll have in 29? Areola, Soucek, and who?
And Soucek. And depending on what position, it'll either be Emerson if I need a defender or Bowen if I need a forward.
To be honest, I would...
Sorry, midfielder.
You're going to need both. Just get the offensive player.
Yeah, Bowen.
You said Emerson there, so I take it that's the defensive player you'd go for.
Yeah, 100%. So far, I was getting forward as well. But Emerson with Paquetá on that side.
He also falls into the line of interest. Mm. If I need a defender this week and go, right, Emerson, Burnley at home, Villa at home, yep. Newcastle away is a bit more ugly in 30, but just go, okay, yeah, maybe, might be worth it if I need a playing body now.
If I get confirmation that Trippier's out,
that's where you think you're going.
I'd probably go to Emerson.
Rather than a Bournemouth or a Luton defender. Yeah. I mean, you've got Doughty.
I've already got Doughty.
I don't want double Luton defence,
no,
man.
Me neither.
No point.
That's why I've just ruled that off the table. And I'm like, who from Bournemouth? Like you said, is it Kerkez? Who am I going to buy? I don't really want a Bournemouth defender.
I was going to have double defence of Bournemouth or Luton, if the goalkeeper's one, I think it's fine. Like if you're going to go Neto and Kerkez, fine. Yeah. Kaminski and Doughty. Fine. Do I want to go, oh, I'm going to take a -4 for bloody Ted and Mengi? No, I don't want to be doing that, personally.
I wouldn't be doing that.
On Areola.
Yes.
So he's now the highest scoring goalkeeper in the game, Suj.
Yeah.
laughing at the back. 52 of his 99 points have come in five games, which were Chelsea at home, Manchester United at home, Arsenal away, Brighton at home, and Everton away. Absolutely conceivable that someone has benched him in all five of those. His average in his other 19 games is 2.47 points per game.
Yep.
I think for many of us, we'd have probably had those returns if it wasn't for Dubravka's price, Kelleher's price now, for those who've gone that sort of way, where it was more likely we're going to bench him this week, even though Everton away was probably the best of those five fixtures.
Other teams have better fixtures.
From the replies of the tweets and I sent, it's definitely people have benched him in all five.
Liverpool, Newcastle both kept clean sheets. It was just the penalty save that made the difference.
But I'd still rather have the choice every week.
Honestly, he's been hammer of the year so far. What a goalkeeper.
So he's got 13 points, but if Beto scores the penalty, the choice to put the Dubravka in goal is the right choice, perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, outcome versus expectation.
I don't know what circumstances you would want to buy an Everton player in, but if there is one, it's Dwight McNeil. He's the only one that I look
based on what you watched at the weekend. Yeah.
He's the only one that I feel like has got any level of threat that might return to fantasy points. There's not a single other player there. Like Mikalenko, obviously, he looked bad. He didn't look like a
football player. You'd go Brantford anyway, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he's cheap. I don't mind Brantford just because he's so cheap.
And Pickford is fine.
I think there's better
goalkeeping options. But this is not now. This is for those wild carding in 30 or 31. I think Everton will be on the agenda, yeah. Everton have a great run in. So I think most people wild carding around 30, 31, I think will go with a Pickford or Brantford. So it's one to keep an eye on. It probably comes down to your choices elsewhere, which one you fall into, rather than Pickford over Brantway or vice versa. Yeah, I think, as covered, I think getting a West Ham offensive player rather than, say, a Luton or a Bournemouth midfielder this week, particularly for those not free hitting in 29, should be considered.
Fulham 3.
Packers back, 7 goals in 2 games.
Yeah. I think you could play devil's advocate on that.
Of course you can.
The two goals we scored to win the game yesterday, Paqueta wasn't on the pitch.
Okay, fine.
He'd been substituted. Let me put it
a different way then. I think, don't be surprised if Burnley have more of the ball at West Ham on Sunday, which means, Suj?
We're going to win. First thing I check whenever we win, what was the possession? 44% against Everton. We won the game.
You have 44% at Everton.
Fulham 3, Brighton 0. What a result for Fulham, you've got to think. Although Brighton haven't been as scary this season as they have in previous seasons, I would say. But still, to be honest with you, they've got something at Fulham that's really worked well. And I don't think they're getting the credit they maybe deserve, because Wolves have done a little bit better than them, perhaps, and had a bit more highlights. Or Bournemouth have been doing similar, but with a new manager, so it's all the more exciting. Fulham haven't bought any marquee big-name signings necessarily into the club. So I think what they've done with the squad they've got, it's really solid.
I think they've got a very good manager there in Marco Silva, yeah, who knows what he's doing.
Even when he was at Watford, you could tell, like, he's got it. It always sometimes doesn't work out at certain clubs. Everton didn't quite work out.
Yeah, but no one works out at Everton.
Nah.
Sorry, guys.
Sean Dyche doing all right.
Some of them don't think that at the moment either.
But yeah, decent, really good.
Here's the really interesting thing. João Paulinho, absent for the last two. They deservedly won at Manchester United. They deservedly beat Brighton at the weekend as well. And to go back to the point on Silva, as I discussed last week, he's shoved the system around a little bit to play two out-and-out sitters. So rather than just having Paulinho and two eights, he's gone with more two sixes, which have been Reid and Lukic, and played Pereira more like a 10 rather than an 8. And it's really done the trick for them in terms of in transition with an attacking forward and more likely a 3 in some previous games they've played. And it's worked brilliant against, with respect to Fulham, two teams who are better than them. And they've deserved to win both without Paulinho. How many times last year did we say, and even said it on COTC with Dara a couple of weeks ago, no Paulinho, massive trouble. And they've come through it to beat United and Brighton. Deserve massive credit. Now, does Paulinho come back in? Yes, probably. Yeah, well, I'm fascinated 100%. To see, though, because the system's worked so well, if that sticks. One of the things we've long said about Muniz, who's on a great little run, still only 4.5, but probably largely going to get ignored because of Solanke, Tony, Watkins, Haaland, is we weren't sure if he'd keep his place for 29. It's almost looking at it now and going, well, how bad would he have to be at Wolves on Saturday not to play against Tottenham in game week 29? Because he deserves to keep the shirt now. I think it was always, once he blanks, he'll probably come out. But he's playing well enough, even at United where he didn't score, he was outstanding, to say, right now, you deserve the shirt, you're staying in. Does Pereira play this more offensive position, which made him really interesting last year? At the moment, it's Iwobi left, Harry Wilson right. No, I'm not going to go back and massively recommend Harry Wilson. But again, for those planning through, Fulham go to Wolves this weekend. A Wolves that's going to be without Cunha, is going to be without Huang, we now know as well. Doubts about João Gomes, and Pedro Neto might even be a doubt as well. So Wolves away, then Tottenham at home, you know you're going to get chances. And look what they've got in game week 30. Trip to Bramall Lane. So, suddenly, I think we head in there and they've largely been overlooked. I'm not saying we should. So if I think back to the scenarios we've been talking about, oh, minus four for like Udogie and it's Villa away. Ugh. Maybe someone like Anthony Robinson is the better choice for me.
Yeah,
maybe
perhaps.
Calvin Bassey and I can fluke a 15-pointer or something. So Fulham players on radar for me. I think probably more defensively than offensively at this moment because it might specifically fix my problem. But say that a lot of people going into this week, like, which Bournemouth midfielder's best? Guess away. There's a few there at Fulham for those carrying through in 29, I'd arguably prefer. I don't know how you, like, if you can afford to go a West Ham midfielder instead, I'm sure you would do that. But I don't mind that for differential, particularly those maybe even wildcarding now, might want to look at having one in as a placeholder. You could have one of them go in as a placeholder for Palmer, for example, like a Wilson or Iwobi or Andreas Pereira. I think Wilson is the one who, stop laughing, Suj, is the one who's got the really high ceiling out of the three.
I don't have a problem with Harry Wilson as a player, or even if you decide you want to buy him. But
it's
I've always
seven again.
Just feel like there's other options that are probably better. But now we're in a different phase of the season where you're talking about the blanks and doubles and getting through, and certain managers are looking for edges and stuff. So I don't mind Harry Wilson at all, to be honest with you.
If Wolves have those players absent, Fulham will beat them at the weekend, I think. And they'll definitely give my team problems in 29.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Wolves in a minute.
And then Sheffield United in game week 30 as well is perfectly reasonable. I think probably Robinson over Bassey, I think, defensively. I feel like Castagne is a little risky in terms of Kenny Tete, can obviously nick some minutes there and stuff. And Willian obviously poses a threat to these other guys as well. It should be noted that as well. If you're comparing, say, a Pereira with, say, a Kudos, for an example, those Fulham offensive midfielders are more likely to get subbed earlier than a Kudos, if that sort of thing, I think, is important to you. And Muniz now, if it works for you, I don't mind it. I think you're good for 29. You'll cover game week 30 fine, but I think it's the same one. Like, are you, unless you was part of a plan where it enabled you, I feel like, to go back to Salah in 30 as an example, I don't know. I still don't know how you pick him over those other forwards. So it's the same thing. Brighton, shocker. And that team lineup is different. It was primarily a back four. This is what they've been doing quite a lot, is a hybrid that becomes a back three and build up. So Estupinan did, for me, play left back rather than left wing back, but it's a hybrid that allows him to go very offensive. There's pressure on him to get straight back into left back positions without the ball. Not the same with Tarik Lamptey on the other side, who played more like a right hand side midfielder. They'll benefit from obviously having Julio Siso back, despite the fact that obviously he didn't play well at the weekend. Evan Ferguson had a lot of chances, but he's not taking them at the moment. They played Jan-Paul van Hek in midfield.
Yep.
And nothing sums up the problem for Brighton players in FPL now than Pascal Gross not starting, and him even taking Lewis Dunk off in the second half as well. So they're just a complete write-off while they're in Europe. They do have a good fixture with Forest at home this week. So if you've got like your Estupinan or your Gross, sure, you're playing it this week, completely getting that. After that, it's complete bin. Blank 29, Liverpool away 30. If they're still in Europe, you need to be off that. However, a note of caution. Should they get well beat in Rome on Thursday? And I don't imagine they will, because I think they'll pick their strongest team as something completely different to this. And that's the other problem. They're probably going to prioritise Europe. But if they get well beat in Rome on Thursday, say 3-4-0, the projections for the doubles for everybody will change again. And that includes potentially having a Brighton double with Chelsea earlier than we might have imagined.
Keep your eyes peeled on that.
Keep eyes on that.
Newcastle, comfortable home win, 3-0. I don't know if you can put it that. I mean, Wolves weren't particularly missing too many players. Huang wasn't available.
It's enough, though.
Cunha wasn't available.
Wolves and West Ham have had, according to Ben Dinnery's Premier Injuries, Wolves and West Ham, I think, are the two teams have had by far the fewest injuries this season. Got a thin, small squad. As soon as you take one or two components out of that, and it's not to say they've been lucky or they've done really well this year, but for them to take those key players out, what you're putting in instead, playing a young boy, Fraser, up front, came on at the weekend, who's quite highly rated. It's not a criticism of him, but there's a drop, right? There's a drop from Sarabia, Neto, Huang, and Cunha, obviously. If they're without Neto on top of the other two at the weekend, as I said, I'd be pretty confident Fulham would go to Wolves and win at the weekend, actually.
I mean, they had more of the ball than
game state, mate. Newcastle. Quite a lot
and
of that.
Also, but I think it's down to quality of chances. Five big chances for Newcastle, nada for Wolves.
So, game state, you're losing, right? If you think of how little possession Wolves had at, say, at Tottenham, they were never losing. So, that impacts things. And Newcastle, I think, well set to obviously go and counter teams and hurt these teams more. You actually even saw it with the Wolves game against Sheffield United, where they're almost more at risk because of how high they play. So I've spoken in the past about that back three being okay but not great in terms of their distribution. Well, they're also not great if they're higher up the pitch. If you go over the top of them, turning, it's only Gomez has got a bit of pace. Kilman's not quick. Dawson's obviously not quick.
He's about 40.
So the more they can defend their penalty area rather than higher up the pitch, the more it obviously suits them. And I think that's why we've seen this trend where in certain games against so-called weaker opposition, Wolves have struggled would be harsh, but let's say not blown them away as we might have expected. You know, 1-0 Sheffield United, 1-0 Burnley, and yet gone to Tottenham, got two, gone to Chelsea, got four, gone to Brentford, got four, got a draw at Brighton. This, if they'd have had their key attacking players available in this, they could have done that more, stayed in the game longer, and possibly get a positive result out of it. So for Newcastle, it's perfect timing to play Wolves, and I think it might be for Fulham this coming weekend as well. So Wolves now absolutely completely off of radar, I think.
Yeah.
They go to Villa in 30 as well, so even for those three hitting, it's not brilliant on the other side. So if you do still have Huang in there, I think it's a sell. And I think even if you've got Neto, I think there's a lot of options for you to move to, which will be difficult because if he's fit, you look at Fulham at home and think, well, that's a decent fixture, but I'd consider moving it, particularly for those obviously running through game week 29. Thing is as well, without his mates, it's a little bit like the old Eze Elise thing. If you need your mates, otherwise people, Neto's the problem. Don't give Neto space. So people will focus way more on him. For Newcastle, good result, obviously. Murphy played rather than Almiron. Bit of a surprise, perhaps. So too, Dan Byrne playing rather than Tino Livramento again at left back. But Livramento obviously could be in for a run now, subject to what the news is on Kieran Trippier. And if Trips is bad, Livramento will become popular quickly. Perhaps not for now, and obviously they don't play in 29, but from game week 30 onwards, I've spoken about this a lot, their run of fixtures is really good. That starts with West Ham at home in game week 30. He's 4.1 or 4.2, Livramento. 4.1
he is right now. Like, no, not even a 1% ownership, like nothing.
If we got in a situation where Reece James wasn't going to be back this season and Kieran Trippier was going to be out for the rest of the season, I can already see the wild cards building of Gusto, Livramento, Branthwaite, Arsenal defender, plus one more, take your fancy. I can actually see it building that way. So Livramento needs eyes on. I also think Alexander Isak, eyes on as well. Again, he's not going to be one for now because of the other forwards. But again, from game week 30 onwards, we know Callum Wilson's not going to be back till May and may not be back at all this season. They'll obviously get into a run where, subject to their FA Cup involvement, it's once a week, right? But it could be if they go out the cup to City, which is probable, but then depends what Manchester United do as well. There could obviously just be one game a week, bod one additional fixture against Palace. And I think that as well, if you have the Palace game going to 34 and they double with that good run of fixtures, I can see moves like Watkins to Isak in 31, for example, when Watkins goes to Man City, and then Watkins also got Arsenal away in 33. I can see people then saying, right, is this time to take the punt on someone like Isak? So definitely eyes on for a few Newcastle players. Dubravka wouldn't go near at the moment. We do expect Nick Pope back at some point in April, and when he's back, he'll be back in the team and they'll be better for it. I'm looking forward to that game Monday night, Chelsea-Newcastle, because I think it will be a real bad narrative for whichever one loses.
Nottingham Forest 0, Liverpool 1. Let's just deal with the controversy.
What controversy? Well, it's a mistake. It's a mistake from Paul Tierney. Simple as that. But Liverpool scored 2 minutes later. Is it a massive clanger? Yeah, but Liverpool scored 2 minutes later. And apparently, I've not seen
it. You saying 2 minutes is a long enough time for Forest to deal with it?
I get it. The ball would have obviously... Listen, Forest would be on the attack. And who knows, maybe Forest score. But you can't say you lost directly for that. The probability of you actually scoring with the ball... Yeah, you probably don't lose the game. I get it, but there's too much happens in between to directly blame that incident on Liverpool's goal. They may have found a different way of doing it at that late stage in the game, piling so many men into the box.
Makeshift team, though, for Liverpool, a little bit.
It's a super result. Super result.
Just take it.
I actually predicted them to get beat.
Yeah.
And when I saw the team, when I was at White Hart Lane on Saturday, I thought you're going to be in trouble with that line, because there was no Endo as well. I thought Endo would probably play. So massive, massive credit for them getting through this. Me and Clayton have spoken about this a bit recently. For them, it's like, keep winning. If you can beat City as well, they will feel invincible going into that running. Honestly, they will, because the worst of it's out the way. They'll see a path in the running where they're more difficult. I think the most difficult away game left would probably be Manchester United, and some of the other more difficult games they've got, like Tottenham's at home. Admittedly, sorry, they do go to Villa in game week 37, but you might even get to a scenario there where Liverpool have the title in their hands and Villa have fourth wrapped up. It might even look like a good fixture by that point. So they'll really fancy themselves in the running. I think some of their key players will be back this coming week. Nunes will know, Szoboszlai will know. Trent is going to be a no, but Mo's obviously going to be in contention. And get those three back on the pitch, Salah, Nunes, Szoboszlai, then it just looks a lot stronger. Alexis McAllister, really good XA at the weekend. Brilliant assist as well. Stays calm on his weak foot at a really important moment. And Nunes takes the big chance with a brilliant, brilliant header. But Forest missed key chances as well. I presume we're not looking at Liverpool this week. I don't suppose even if Mo's fit this week, people are suddenly, oh, I'm going to break up my team for Mo with City at home. Even though I always say it's a good fixture for him, surely you're waiting for 30 now.
Yeah, 100%.
So I don't think there's new investment in Liverpool. He's probably holding on to your likes of Kelleher, Bradley. It's probably more a case, do you play him or not this weekend? I think in most scenarios, you're probably going to be quite nervous about that, particularly if you watched City yesterday. So it's Forest. Forest are more of interest. Can we say, by the way, before Liverpool's goal, Matt Sells made one absolutely brilliant save, which would have been for an own goal. Quite quietly, he's gone in goal and done okay in comparison to what the other two were doing. That's obviously made them a little bit more stable.
Yeah.
The one that people are really going to be looking at is Anthony Elanga, who missed the big chance in the first half and obviously played up front. Now, he played up front with Divock Origi on the right. I suggested this time last week, keep an eye on Almunyiyi, because he was taken off at half-time against Villa, and it might be that he's not at 100%. Now, if Almunyiyi is at 100%, he'll go back through the middle, I'm sure, and Elanga will go wide. There might have been something specific where they wanted Origi versus Robertson. I don't know the honest reason for that, but I think even if you think of Origi's spell at Liverpool, Klopp used him wide on occasion quite a lot, not necessarily just through the middle. So Elanga OOP doesn't necessarily stick, but the underlying data, generally speaking, is good. If you're going into this week, then it's Brighton away, which on paper looks tough, but it might be a heavily rotated Brighton, and you know you get chances against them. Luton away, 29, And the fixture in game week 30 isn't bad either. So they've got in game week 30, Palace at home. Then it's Fulham at home, Tottenham away, Wolves at home, Everton away. If you're carrying a bit longer, now the Liverpool game's gone, Forest get right onto radar.
Yeah, for me, they're only a look at when I get around to wildcarding.
We discussed that you'd probably more likely buy a West Ham player than, say, a Barkley this week. But would you rather buy like an Alanga or a Barkley this week?
Barkley, I think.
Because of the double?
Yeah. And 29.
Yeah, I think the influence on that... It might also be whether you want Alanga in 30, because what I keep thinking as well is if I went for someone like Alanga, I keep thinking, well, when I get 30, though, I can see him being my move to Palmer, even though they've got a good run. So it might be, if for those running through, if you're not wildcarding in 30, might be game with 30, would maybe swing it, with Alanga and Palace at home and Barkley going to Tottenham. But yeah, I think the double and then the home fixture, I'd probably still go Barkley personally, yeah.
What about Palace? Away from home at your place, they didn't do very well. 3-1 defeat, even though they took the lead.
Harsh.
But if you look at the statistically, you dominated the game. Possession, territory, all of that kind of thing. Which is not uncommon with Spurs. You still give away chances at the other end.
I'm going to correct you on that.
Go on.
Because we were much better defensively.
No, but this is what I'm saying. You dominated the game.
Yeah, Palace didn't really have a sniff.
No, that's what I'm saying.
They scored a brilliant goal, which is a complete individual goal of Eze running at us, winning the free kick himself and then burying the free kick himself. The game disappeared somewhat for Palace with him going off. And then, by the way, very importantly, when Adam Wharton went off, it was still 1-0 as well. And any little bit of control they did have in the midfield, which was very minimal, as you can see from the possession statistics, completely disappeared. But what I mean is, in the little bits that they did have it, he's an intelligent player. They just couldn't. They just got swarmed once he went off as well. Once we equalised, you kind of knew we were going to win.
Yep. You probably felt that even before as well, that you still had a lot more attacking.
There was a moment just before we equalise, where it starts hitting, you think, it's going to be one of them days.
Yeah.
And then I remembered, we always score. And no doubt now I've said that, we don't score at the weekend. And of course, that sort of run's going to come to an end at some stage. It's 38 league games in a row now we've scored in.
That's decent.
We always score. Mm-hmm. And you think we're having so much territory here and they're under so much duress. But they weren't under major duress. We played better than we did against Wolves.
Yep.
But at the same time, we weren't knocking down the door. Once we equalised, yeah, we knocked down the door and you knew it was coming. For Palace, just to cover them briefly, because it's easy to get lost in Tottenham, they're another one who fixtures absolutely fine going forward, right? It's Luton at home this week. Then they go to Forest in game week 30. Might be building towards a double win 34, possibly, as discussed previously. I wonder if someone like Richards, who is definitely going to play at the moment at 3.9, comes into people's thinking. Gaze out for a couple of months. He's going to struggle to play again this season. So he 100% is staying in that team at the moment. And Daniel Munoz is one to keep an eye on. He's more expensive, but as a wing-back, he's possibly more interesting. And they're definitely going to stick with wing-backs. That said, from what I saw at the weekend, bar some very brief periods in the second half where they tried to press a little bit higher, and I think naturally fell into a routine of, oh, this isn't a good idea. Because when they did, we just cut through them. Our difficulty is when they sat deep. Right. As soon as they came, and even if you look at Tottenham's goals, the first comes from a mistake from Anderson where there's pressure on the ball. The second is obviously ends up being a cross. And the third is us playing through them all the way from Van de Ven beats, I can't remember who it was, might have been Edouard at that point, basically in his own penalty area to carry us up the pitch. He was phenomenal again, by the way, Mickey Van de Ven. So it was only when they were higher they were in real trouble. And it's a theme about Tottenham. I'm going to talk more on our Patreon podcast on Wednesday about how we deal with these lower blocks, because it's becoming a problem.
A problem for a lot of teams, it's not just Tottenham.
But on Palace, if I didn't know better, I could have just said that was a Roy Hodgson team at the weekend. There's definitely different bits of structure in terms of their pressing and their attempts to do it on occasion higher up the pitch, rather than just being, say, the constant low block we saw against Chelsea, which was, we're going to sit on the edge of our area, what have you got? No, it wasn't completely that, but once we kind of broke out of our third, yeah, it funneled very, very quickly into a 5-4-1 off the ball. And so I definitely think you'll still see defensive traits in them. Another thing as well is obviously there were occasions when they're trying to press and that's not common for them. So I wouldn't be surprised if you even see a spate of substitutes scoring goals against Crystal Palace for the rest of this season. Because I think if, say, they get a victory against Luton at the weekend, they're safe then. That distance for Luton's what, 11 points then? It's too big, they're safe, right, at that point. And I think you might see Glasner work them harder, and it might be that they have to take a one step back for two forwards into next season. Like, start getting them ready with their pressing for next season. I think in the shorter term, they might suffer for that. Eze will obviously be a player that's perfectly reasonable for people to get should they want to do so. For my lot, Sonny's the one at the moment, why he's going to play through there, and there's no reason why he won't stay through the middle at the moment. I don't think Richarlison will be back for Fulham. I've seen this sort of thing before with players where particularly they speak to media from their own country and, I'll be back quicker than expected. I imagine Richarlison would like to go on international duty with Brazil, so doesn't want to rule himself out.
Yep.
And he probably will be back around about the point of the Fulham game, we hope. But I think even if he is, it's as a substitute rather than a starter and enough for him to go and play for Brazil.
Yep.
Timo Werner might be one that people want to punt. In game week 29 specifically, definitely not one for this week. But I don't know, let's say we got there and you think he's going to play and Tony's unavailable or something like that. Might be one that comes onto people's radar, but I would stress that's a 1-2 week kind of punt at that stage. Yes, he scored. You get the old frustration with him, like that where he's missed the big chance in the first half. His first touch is incredible. It comes at him at near hip height, and he manages to control it with his heel and carry it into his path. Just roll it in, mate. And he takes these little touches, never gets it out of his feet. It's like he overthinks things. He falls into that like Nunes category. You got too much time. Try and do the difficult thing. Just shift it once out your feet into your right foot and then do exactly what Son did. Exactly what Son did for the third goal is exactly what Werner should have been doing with his chance. You don't have any confidence when he gets through.
No, that's why when you say people are going to punt him this week, I'm like, why? To give yourselves grey hair or anxiety issues? I just think it's quite straightforward with Spurs. You go Son. If you can't afford Son, you go Madison. If you can't afford Madison and you really want to go defensive, really you go with Doggy just because he's played and Porro hasn't played, but apart from that, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
you can get one of the others if you really want, but
if it's a midfielder, you're heading to and you're playing towards game at 29, for me, you're buying a West Ham player first because West Ham are playing Burnley and Tottenham are playing Villa, and I do think there'll be goals in the Tottenham Villa game, but I just think that makes way more sense if that's what you're doing, or even a Villa player as they're playing at home, a Bailey or Douglas Luiz, for example. Yeah. I think when it comes to 29. I think Madison will be the one that you'll want to punt if you want a Tottenham midfield player on top of Son. Otherwise, yeah, it's definitely Son. You know, Romero scored the most goals now of any defender this season.
Wow.
He's not the one. It's still Udogie or Porro. One, if obviously they're both fit. One big difference in terms of us defensively being more structured was the movement from the fullbacks into midfield wasn't as hyper as what it always is. And also what was happening, I've spoke about when I see little variances from Ange, I did get one a little bit where you had particularly with Emerson Royal starting in a midfield position and actually moving back into a fullback position to allow us to come out of beyond Palace's first line a little bit easier. We're much better defensively. It's not to say we will be in the next upcoming games. And I realise Palace at home is kind of an ideal fixture to look better defensively. But it was some little structure points that were better in terms of Tottenham and what they were going to do when they lost possession. But yeah, based on the last, basically from when Palace scored, yeah, we deserved to win the game. We did swarm them at the end.
We've got Villa this weekend. Villa have just gone and beaten Luton away 3-2. If you look at it on SofaScore, where it shows you the balance of play, possession-wise, and attacking momentum, that is a game of two halves, if ever I've seen
very much
a chart that shows a game of two halves. All Villa in the first half, almost all Luton in the second half, until a little flurry at the end, and Villa obviously come away with the win.
Not even a flurry, it's just the one. It's not to say Villa didn't deserve to win necessarily.
I think if they beat you at the weekend, that's 8 points. I know you've got a game in hand.
If Villa win at the weekend, it should be fourth done.
They should be then seeing that out. The only thing is they've obviously got European football. to contend with as well.
Well, it's more. I've actually got them for the rest of the season. I've got Villa bottom of my fixture ticker with all the fixtures left. So there's tough games to go. You know, I've still got to play all of the top three, for example. City and Arsenal, I said, in away respectively in 31, 33. Liverpool at home in 37. Obviously, still got to play my team this forthcoming weekend as well. They've got a tough run from now till the end of the season. You got Bournemouth and Brentford at home during this course, which are arguably the only two greens. So there is a tough run coming for Villa. But that gap, I think, would certainly be big enough to feel safe from the likes of Manchester United. And it's 8 points, 8 points to Tottenham, and then it will be at least sort of 11 to United. Then surely from there, the worst they'll finish is fifth. But from there, they should take it. And to be honest, from here anyway, even with that tough run of fixtures, how many games we got left, Serge? 11, is it?
Yep. Or 12, depending on who you are. You lot have got 12. They've got 11.
They've got 11, yeah. I think five wins will get them fourth. That's it.
Any thoughts? I mean, look, both these teams are interesting from a fantasy point of view. Luton, because the double followed by a game in 29, Aston Villa, one of only two teams in the top seven, James, who play every week between now and the end of the season. There are only one or two teams in the top seven that play every week between now and the end of the season.
Oh, okay. I see what you've done there. Great. Yeah.
We changed it from top eight to top seven. Okay. If you want to know a little bit more about chip strategy, I recommend you go back to last Thursday's podcast.
It's all still relevant.
Yeah, except just some of the statistical bits are a bit wrong.
It's basically about teams. If you've not listened to last Thursday's chip pod, I highly recommend it. It is definitely valid till at least Thursday when Brighton go to Roma, so you can still catch up on it.
We can always do an addendum to it, James. Luton, you own Doughty, Morrison maybe. Anyone else you're going to add? Barkley maybe. Probably
can't
not.
See me buying a midfielder. How am I taking a minus four to sell any of Saka, Son, Bailey, Bowen, Foden? I'm probably benching Foden.
I'd probably buy Douglas Luiz over Barkley as well, to be honest. I'm just not steaming in. But Carlton Morris, I think, is worth it.
For me this week, I think kudos.
Yeah.
I'd go kudos. Now, for attack the Burnley game now, that's what I'd want to do. I get people want Bournemouth Luton midfielders. I think of the Luton midfielders, for clarity, yes, it probably is Ross Barkley. Dan Ashby, by the way, and Neil Grover, are Luton and Bournemouth correspondents, respectively, will be on Clash of Correspondents. That's going to be available for you this Wednesday as well. So you'll get the fan opinion on both clubs on Bournemouth Luton. And we will have a heavy conversation about the midfield assets, I think, because it's tricky. So we'll cover all the detail in more detail and get the fan view from them. My instinct is yes, Barkley from the Luton midfielders still, although Lokonga being out doesn't help his positioning because he's very much trusted to run the game, right? So he goes and picks it up off the centre-backs. But he can still return from set pieces and the likes. And if he does get within 25, 30 yards, he's not shy in terms of having a shot. So I think it would still be Barkley, primarily because Ogbene is a forward. If Ogbene had been a midfielder, I think it'd be more of a debate. I think we'll talk about Jordan Clark as a possibility on that COTC as well and get Dan's opinion to see if he would fancy Clark over Barkley. Otherwise, nah, you're not in there for the midfielders. And it became a little bit more complicated at the weekend because obviously Doughty started at left wing back. Amari Bell, who went into the game as a massive hamstring doubt, lasted 5 minutes. He went off. Doughty played left-sided centre-back and it stunted them massively. They really struggled. It's not even he necessarily struggled so much, but Ogbene came when he played left wing-back. So suddenly, that brilliant relationship we've had of Doughty at left wing-back and Ogbene at right wing-back, and they have real different skill sets and a really nice balance. You've now got Ogbene in front of Doughty. And it just wasn't right. You had neither player in their correct position. Once Rob Edwards changed it, and I get why he didn't want to change it, because you don't trust Kabore in a back three. That's the biggest problem. So you end up playing Kabore in the attacking three in the end and putting Doughty back to left wing back, and it was transformative for them to get those two back in offensive areas. So, but I can't see... You wouldn't buy a Bene over Morris.
No.
Couldn't make any case for it. Doughty, clearly the obvious one. I think that's the sort of one where if you don't own, because of the potential upside for it, and say I was in that position where I need to set minus four for a defender this week. If I didn't have Doughty, it'd be Doughty. End of story. I'd go and get him with the double and then the 29 fixture. That would be the one clear as day for me. The other ones, the Mengies and stuff like that, yeah, he's going to play twice. I wouldn't be expecting a lot of it. Doughty's in for the offensive stuff, basically. And he could have had more than a five-pointer because the goal he assists for Morris is like a copy of a goal they scored at Everton, game week 7 again. And then they created the exact same scenario for Morris again, and he could have scored again. So even just on delivery to set pieces is outstanding. We know he's a cross spammer. Just don't expect any clean sheets from it. You are looking for the attacking stuff. Kaminsky, I don't mind, obviously, if people want to get involved in that. I think if I was free hitting this week, it would definitely be Doughty and Morris, and it would probably be close for me between Barkley and just gambling on Kaminsky, because Kaminsky's going to have to make saves. It's the same thing. If you make enough saves, you can get bonus points off that and stuff as well. So I think it's only really those four would be a consideration for me. For Villa,
a lot of people already.
By the way, I think Doughty will play wing back. That centre back shit, I can't see it happening again. They're the new boy, Hashioka, I think it is, came on and played left-sided centre-back. And he looked really composed, actually. We thought he was a right wing-back. He played left-sided centre-back. He was composed. That allowed Doughty to do his thing. I'm very confident that even if Bell's out long-term, they missed Gabriel Osho at the weekend. He was a miss for them as well. They'll be a bit better off if he's back available. But I think if it came to it, they'd play Hashioka at left-sided centre-back. Doughty will play wing-back. And Ogbeni will play either right wing-back or the right-sided forward position. Don't go and get Kabore. Even he could stick at right wing-back, but I think he just works better for them with Ogbeni. So Heath Chong might be another one we could talk about as a possible to compete with Barkley as well, but I'd be more concerned about his minutes. Like Townsend was back in the team.
Go and get Harry Wilson, mate, if you really want
to. He's on a good little run, Chong.
Yeah, which will come to an end at some point.
For Villa, Ollie Watkins' performance in that first half is probably the best I've seen from any forward in any game this season. Genuinely, absolutely brilliant. I'm going to do a piece on him with Talking Tactics this week for advanced and intermediate plus tier patrons, because I think it honestly was near perfect. Such everything, his link plays, hold up, he's bringing people into play. He's running, his forward movement, his timing of his movement, his heading, his shooting, brilliant. Honestly, phenomenal. Got to go with England in the summer. He can't not in this form.
But how would he not?
Well, there's competition, isn't there? The thing is, Southgate might just take one other forward, right? And I guess Tony could be that player instead, right?
Because Tony's played 3 games of football since he's come back.
Tony is a similar profile to Kane, I would say. Let's say that.
If Ivan Tony went ahead of Ollie Watkins...
I'd take both, by the way, personally. We might be talking about it on people's poll tomorrow. Nah. That just reminds me to send a tweet out. Thanks, Suj.
Yeah. Most people own, right, one or other of Watkins and a defender, whether it's a Pau Torres or what have you. So you're really just talking about whether or not you want to add one or two more. But I, like you, think go with a West Ham midfielder over maybe McGinn or Luiz.
If you want to get Bailey or Luiz this week, it's fine. Jacob Ramsey's obviously off the table now. I wouldn't be surprised if that's quite a bad injury. I wouldn't be surprised if Metatarsal, the way he was feeling for himself. Those can take a while if you've done one. Well, I'm sure we'll find out this week. Probably wouldn't go into Moreno at this moment with Dean coming back and scoring. I think Moreno does keep his place, but I wouldn't be going. Konsa is by miles the safest one to go to now if you want a Villa defensive one. Definitely. They brought him straight back in without hesitation after a period of a few weeks out injured. The Pau Torres stuff is annoying. And I think, look, Torres is over long lay in terms of his importance. I think they have a weakness defensively in the air as well, which you've seen again at the weekend because they don't have anyone dominant like a Tyrone Mings. It's part why Konsa's gone straight back in for a fixture like that as well. He's obviously their most dominant one. But he doesn't dominate in the same way like Mings. You feel like he's always got his head on it. He's been a big miss for them this year. That's not so important for a game like Tottenham at the weekend, but It will be for West Ham in game week 29. You can be sure of that.
Yep.
So I think Torres is going to be defined by what happens in these Conference League games against Ajax. It's obviously a massive tie for the club. We'd have to be of the opinion of him now because of what's happened all year. Is he going to play twice in a week? It's questionable, isn't it? Like, if Longley plays in Amsterdam, I'd be more confident of Torres playing against Tottenham. But I also don't... I'm not bothered about Torres playing against Tottenham. I don't particularly want to pick him this week. It's the West Ham game and then the Wolves game, 29 and 30, respectively, I'm more bothered about. So, for me, I'm just going to suck it up and leave it with him, obviously. Because even in 29, if you got me a 1 point off the bench, 1 point off the bench, isn't it? I wouldn't be forcing that out. But I think it's definitely Konsa at the moment. Cash is playing too deep of a role at the moment. And there is even a case to say that maybe even a game like yours in 29, could he go Cash, Longley, Torres? Maybe.
Yep.
Maybe it's possible and play Cash at right back. He may well do that. So I think Konsa, if you want a defensive one, clearly... For me, Bailey, the upside over Luiz. You've seen it again with the data at the weekend. Bailey should have got more than what he got. Played really well again offensively in the first half. It is alarming how much they fell off in the second half because they were excellent in the first half. But I also think we've given Luton a lot of praise. We have to criticise them a bit for that first half because it took them too long to get in the game. Way too long, and it could have been dead and buried by that point. And yeah, when it went to 2-2, I think most of us was thinking they might win the game, which is remarkable. I was watching the game as well, thinking about Villa. You lost the 2-0 half-time lead at United. If you do this again, that's psychologically really bad. So as much as their second half performance didn't deserve it, Villa, they deserve credit for creating the one key moment. And by the way, it's Kabore is just so asleep on Luka Dean. That's another reason why I wouldn't be so secure on his minutes. Villa have got themselves in a great position. Five wins up.
You're right.
I think five wins from here does it. I mean, they beat us at the weekend and put that, because our running's tough as well. If they're 8 points clear of us, then obviously if we go down and win this 2 points, then
game on.
It's a shootout. I don't think a draw would be a terrible result for us.
Just because you've got the game in hand as it stands at the moment, but
I would ignore the game in hand because it's Chelsea away and we'd never do nothing in that fixture. And we've also got tough fixture. But I think, look, 5 points over 10 games left is doable, isn't it? Eight becomes... Whenever it becomes more points than games, it's nearly game over. And that's what I'm saying. If they're then, like, 11 points clear of, say, United, that's game over. It should be, anyway.
Well, Burnley are 11 points adrift of Forest, and they've still got 11 games left to go. Burnley 0, Bournemouth 2.
There isn't going to be a points deduction big enough for Forest or Everton to give Burnley or Sheffield United a chance now.
I wanted to sing at Bournemouth, to be honest with you. Are you West Ham in disguise?
However, I thought Burnley played quite well yesterday, actually.
That's why I wanted to sing to Bournemouth. Are you West Ham in disguise? Do you know Bournemouth's possession in the game?
I don't, but it's 60 plus, got to be.
Bournemouth's possession in the game.
No, Burnley's.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying Bournemouth. What I'm singing to Bournemouth. Are you West Ham in disguise?
What was Burnley's possession?
75%.
Wow.
Bournemouth, 25%. And they nicked it 2-0.
Yeah, Burnley.
Lovely.
Here's the thing with Burnley, I think, particularly. For those who regularly listen to us, how many times this season have I said, there's something about them, you know? Something about them. I think most of the first half of the season, I kept saying, I think they'll be the ones of the three promoted clubs will get out of this. The problem is, they are absolutely atrocious in both penalty areas. Atrocious. Defensively, they're so bad. I mean, that on the first goal, it shouldn't be that easy to score goals. It's very well taken by Justin Kluivert, don't get me wrong. But it's so easy. The second goal is perfect. And when Bournemouth did actually have their moments, you'd think, I score goals here. No
three shots on target. No problem. Two goals. Conversion is crazy high.
And the conversion of chances for Burnley is obviously a problem as well. I wasn't impressed with Fofana particularly. He was very heavy with his touches and that. And yet in midfield, despite missing Josh Brownhill, who's been a key player for them, they played really well. In between the two boxes, they play absolutely fine. Your mate, the fly, every week. Are you going to... Would you kill a fly? Would you kill a fly? I will kill it. Oh, he's buzzy. How is he still alive? It's like every Monday he turns up for like 5 minutes. You've put him on his back now, the poor bastard. Okay, he's flying. Brilliant.
Done.
It's nice to see you jump out your skin anyway.
It's like, what the hell is that? Look, it's not a drop of water like last time I thought it was.
Burnley. Condensation. Burnley rule out of looking at, even at 29. Like, for those on Charlie Taylor, like, well done on your 1 point this week and your 1 point in game with 29 is probably where it's at. Even against, I know Brentford aren't hugely convincing. I would not be expecting anything from that. I would be surprised if they kept a clean sheet for the rest of this season. They don't give you anything in terms of a sense of they're in control at any point when they're defending, unfortunately. I really liked how they played in between the two boxes. That said, I think they were unlucky not to even win the game. Never mind get something out of it. Bournemouth were poor, which is more of interest for people going into this week. I don't think we should read too much into it. They were poor. If you think about the two teams they're playing next, Luton and Sheffield United, it's actually not relatable to Burnley. Neither are going to dominate the ball in the way that Burnley... I'm sure Luton can have spells, but that absence of Lokonga now, no. Sheffield United ain't going to go to Bournemouth and dominate the ball. So it's not too much we should read into it. But, same time, they weren't good. Andoni Iraola, half-time interviews with managers walking across the pitch. Yeah, like that. He was very blunt about not happy, and if we don't improve, we won't get signed out of the game. But I don't think it did improve much, and yet they still won the game by more.
Yep.
Admittedly, the longer they went on, the more chances they had on the counter. I think Solanke, for me, if he's fit, is given. Get him in, captain. I don't want to be on the wrong side of that with those two fixtures. He could only be better if it was Burnley and Sheffield United at home. Yeah, but he didn't score against Burnley, and I get it, and he didn't look himself. But on a different
way,
on a different day, he's actually got more goals away than at home, I think, this season. I think so. But on a different day, it'll fall to him nicely. It's what it can be, can't it? He could get a trick in one and one in the other or something, couldn't he? He could go off. I don't want to be on the wrong side. Morris could, like, score one in both. That's how it feels like. That would be great. Solanke could get a hat-trick in either. That's the difference between the two, I think. So that's a given for me to get in. I think defensively, Kerkez for this week.
Yep.
If you were free hitting this week, I think it's Neto, Kerkez, Solanke would be the free. For those looking a bit longer, Zabani is stable but not going to do a lot for you. That said, as Kerkez majorly make you feel like he's going to get offensive returns, there was nothing in that game yesterday, but then he didn't have the opportunity to get forward enough. And I do know that historically, Iraola's teams can have a left-sided bias, which might show more in some of these next two fixtures. Kerkez is the sexier pick rather than Zabani. On centre side, as said earlier, I think he's probably more likely to not play again this season than play this week. So, obviously, look, don't rush a decision, but I'm pretty sure on Friday you'll find out that he's definitively ruled out. So, begin making plans. The midfielders is too tough. I think Tavernier is probably the one that's going to get the most favouritism and will be the one that people want to go to, because historically that's what we've seen in terms of his returns per minute has always been better than others. Their record in when he plays has been better as well. That dates back, predates even Iraola under Gary O'Neill last season. So I think Tavernier is the one that will be really popular. I think Alex Scott is just not getting enough minutes to trust in that at the moment. If Semenyo was a midfielder, he'd be the one, I think. But it's a forward, so how are you fitting it in? Maybe three hitters could go Semenyo, Morris and Solanke this week. There's so many other midfielders you could pick. Maybe that's a possibility. I don't think buying Semenyo is on the table, really, for most people. So I think it's probably Tavernier from the midfielders. If you're running a little bit longer term, I get the appeal of Kluivert because of his price. That's an easier one to bench. But the thing is with them is, their fixtures are so good, even from game week 30 onwards, you don't really want to be benching it. No. You want to play it, and I think it's going to be a headache. I think the fact that they're out of the FA Cup is really good news for game week 28. It's increased the probability massively of getting the same team twice. But we can't be shocked if the likes of Tavernier don't start twice. If it's just Sheffield United at the weekend, which is great in itself, don't get me wrong. And then Sinisterra plays instead of one of them against Luton, for example. Billin plays instead of Kluivert. These sort of things can definitely happen. Dango Ouattara as well. And Dango Ouattara is a small threat to Kerkez, I think, by the way. He played left back against my team, do you remember? When they had really loads of injury problems. And he actually played really well. And he went off injured. And in fixtures like these, I don't think it's impossible that Iraola could even look at doing that. So the only one that's with the two that's safe is Smith, subject to Aaron's fitness, and Zabani definitely. I guess Chris Meppham, he's going to play twice as well over this period. Zabani's the one. If you need it long term, Zabani's probably the only one you can go to.
I ain't buying none of that.
Neto in goal is perfectly reasonable.
I think I'm going to have no Bournemouth going into this.
They have
week.
A great run, and there's a good possibility of them potentially doubling in 34 as well when it stiffens up. So, and then you can bin it for the run in. Really good fixtures coming up.
When
not
we get
just
down
the double.
To the diff show on Friday, I'm going to be predicting Sheffield United to get a draw 1-1 at Bournemouth. So I'm avoiding them. I'm going to be getting nada at Bournemouth.
It would
no
be,
interest whatsoever.
You can see it now, can't you? Both Bournemouth games ending 1-1. Goal scorers being like Aarons and...
Well, like yesterday, Cliver and Cook. Cook or whoever it was. Cliver
Cook,
and Semenya.
Lewis Cook, two assists. You've seen Lewis Cook's XA?
Probably zero.
0.02 for the game, yeah. I mean, it's two assists from his own half. Shout out to Fabian Schär's 0.00 assist, XA assist for Tino Livramento at the weekend as well.
Last but not least, Man City 3, Manchester United 1. I mean, even when United are 1-0, it's the inevitability, isn't it? But if you ever wanted to see a slapping on paper, 73% possession, over 3 XG, 27 shots, 10 inside the box, 8 on target, 4 big chances, missed 3 of them. Haaland could have had a lot more.
The miss at the end of the first half, I screamed. She was like, what's wrong with you? I was like, yeah, you need to see this.
Too easy in the end.
It's not easy when you're... And again, I said last week...
But they have the patience to see it out.
And the experience. Yeah. They don't panic, do they?
Nah.
They're absolute kings of that. And actually, last week I said, I kind of defend them because a lot of people have been saying, oh, it's boring watching City. Watching Manchester City try and chase a game is one of the most exciting things. They played the whole game at such a high tempo. It was remarkable that United were surviving as long as they were. And I don't think it was through particular skill because City were creating massively. United were having this system with Casemiro and Mino, who were basically trying to man-mark De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva. But as soon as it split... You got John Stones, a different position again this week, kids, appearing out of centre-back and just going straight through the middle of them and just pinning them back. Pinning them back. Way too good. Phil Foden is extraordinary. What a player. What a player. It's always been there. And did you see Pep's comments after the game?
No, was that when he was talking about him being world-class or whatever?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I read the quote.
Yeah.
He basically said player of the season. And he said the major difference now as well is that he is winning us games. If you look at his starts this season, he started sort of 90% plus in the games this season. You look across, I mean, the last six, it's 90 minutes. In fact, looking back to the defeat at Villa in game week 15, he's played 90 minutes in all but one Premier League game. He played 45 minutes against Bournemouth in game week 11, 66 minutes against West Ham in game week 5. There was 4 minutes at Sheffield United in game week 3. This is not a minutes problem with him anymore. Now, could it become one? Well, of course, because they've got Champions League coming up. They might have good fixtures around an FA Cup semi-final, possibly. But right now, irrespective of where it is, he's got to play. Like, there is 0% chance that he doesn't start at Liverpool this weekend.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying people buy him this week, obviously.
It's all whilst the title race is on, right? If they go on a tear up, Liverpool fall away, they end up 7-8 points clear or something, which none of us see happening, right? Then maybe he gets rested. But whilst they need to win games, which they do because they're... behind
well, no, I think even, you know, once if you've got high intensity Champions League games and stuff, he's obviously gonna play like Champions League quarterfinals and semifinals if they get that far, right? He's obviously gonna play in them games because it's too important to him. So that in itself will make him a risk in the league.
Like there's league games that are harder than some of those games sometimes.
He's also young still. What does Pep always say about Haaland?
So, oh, is it too many games? They need a rest. He's like, he's young. He's fine. Now Foden gets through more work. You know what is well is as well, his involvement. We'll know this from the Sky Pods. His involvement in terms of his touches on the ball is extraordinary. How much of the ball he's seeing, even when he's playing in a wide role. And he's ended up playing in this game. He's played wide on the right. And United shoved things about and they put the young boy on at right back. And with Bernardo on the left, it's not comfortable. You could even see he wanted Foden to be going down that side at Lindelof. And he didn't want to move him. So when Guardiola took Doku on, remind me to come back to Doku. When he took Doku off, he moved Bernardo Silva to the left and left Foden on the right because he wanted Foden to keep tearing Lindelof apart. And you could see Bernardo Silva was a bit like me to the left because it would always be Bernardo then to the right. If Bernardo's going to go wide, he'll go on the right. Foden will go either side. Yeah. He wasn't moving Foden because he was doing too much to Lindelof. When United switched it up, and then obviously moved Dalot to the left and brought the young boy on Kambwala on at right back straight away. Yep, you to the left now. Bernardo back to the right. Go and kill this kid instead. And just phenomenal. So even he just move position mid-game as well and still have the absolute deciding factor in it. Brilliant. Brilliant. Stunning, stunning performance. To the extent now as well, I think if we were looking at it now, Foden and De Bruyne, let's just say they had really good fixtures now. If Foden and De Bruyne were the same price, which one would you buy?
Foden.
I think it's there now, yeah.
Yeah, I'd buy Foden.
I think so.
I'd buy Foden.
Yeah. Which is why, again, you know...
If they were the same price of Foden, I'd buy both.
So how am I benching this kid this week?
I have no idea, because there's quite a few people in the questions on Twitter that are like, should I bench Foden or... And then you've got the likes of Cole Palmer.
It is completely nonsensical if I'm in a position of benching someone that good to be going, I'm going to take a -4 for Ross Barkley.
Yeah, no.
No.
No, I'd rather play Foden with Liverpool.
No. Do you think that's the right one to bench? Bailey at home to Tottenham, Bowen at home to Burnley, Son at Villa. I'm obviously not benching Saka.
Bailey at home to Tottenham.
Son at Villa in the same game, Bowen at home to Burnley.
Son's at home, you play Son.
Son, it's at Villa.
Oh, it's at Villa.
But think of Villa on the high line, man.
Who was the third one there?
Bailey at home to Tottenham as well.
And Foden. So there's two.
Yeah, I'm not benching Bowen at home to Burnley either.
Yeah, and don't bench Saka.
No, definitely not. So it's Bailey, Foden, Son.
I'd bench...
Take a -4 for Marcus Tavernier.
I'd bench Bailey, I think. If it was me, I'd probably bench Bailey.
It's not. It can't.
It's
be,
brutal.
It can't be Son, can it? Really?
It's brutal. No, can't I wouldn't Son. Bench Son. It'd be Bailey or Foden, but it's very narrow.
Yeah, and I also know what happens if I bench Bailey.
Good.
Double destroys me, my Doku. Team, and the bench. I think Doku is having a really negative effect on Haaland. I haven't looked at anything statistically to back that up. I think, and I like Jeremy Doku, right? He's lively as all that chopping and stuff. But sometimes you do think, hit the line and cross it, mate. I think he's beginning to piss Haaland off because Haaland is best in the game at movement. And there was times yesterday, Doku had it and the cross did come and Haaland hasn't moved, you know? And I think he's getting frustrated. He's thinking, I don't know if he's coming.
Yeah,
keep making all these check movements and stuff. And he's like, I don't know what this kid's going to do. And I think that's possibly having a little bit of a negative impact on him. It's just a small point to make. Not that I dislike Doku, not that I think he's a bad player. I think he's a very good player, very talented. But I think he's got to work on his end product. Rodri. We will overlook this again when we get into more doubles for Manchester City and more good fixtures later in the season, even though we know he's the most likely to score twice and we know that he gets returns in the more important
play
games
twice,
for City
not score twice.
And comes up clutch, we play once, he'd probably return. We will completely overlook him again. I said a number of weeks ago, I don't hate it if people go for Rodri. What's his returns over like the last 4 or 5, Suj?
Well, look, over the season, it's 6 goals, 6 assists. It's all right. But 10, 3, 3, 10, 3.
6 goals, 6 assists for the holding midfield player.
10. He's every now and then. But when he picks up a goal or an assist, it's usually double-digit return.
There's that, yeah.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal yesterday as well. And by the way, my comments aren't to say Kevin De Bruyne was bad yesterday. He wasn't. I just think as well, as we get later in the season, like De Bruyne is definitely not playing quarter-final game week, quarter final, game week, FA Cup semi final. He's not. He's not. They're going to protect him more. Foden could play a lot of it. Nice. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant victory. For Manchester United, just briefly, they played with Fernandes and McTominay essentially kind of both as false nines, which was designed to shield the ball and into City's eights and obviously shield Rodri. The problem was Rodri just dropped off a bit deeper and then John Stones went and filled in that space and he just kept drifting in behind them all game. And that's how, when City were in their defensive phase, it was so easy for them to build the attacks. I don't know what... In fact, I do know because I think I saw it. Field tilt is one of Clayton's favourite stats. I think it was about 90% for City, which is staggering, by the way. So just dominance, unbelievable. What a goal from Rashford. We have to credit it. But I'm not going to credit much else about the performance. And yes, United did have City a little bit worried with the odd counter-attack early in the game. But City were just so, so dominant. Don't think you'll be investing in a Manchester United player this week, despite the fact it's Everton at home and Bournemouth away in 30 isn't terrible. I think, shout out for Onana, briefly, by the way, because he made some good saves. And I know they mentioned on commentary that actually he's best for preventing shots against XG this season, which might surprise. It feels like
shots or goals?
Preventing goals, sorry. Against,
can't be. Areola's got to be above him.
No, it's Onana, mate.
Mad.
It's Onana. But it's a specific one that he's having problems with, and it's like that phone second goal. I feel like if it's further from his body, he saves it. Those ones that are a bit closer, he's struggling to get down for one reason. You look at a lot of his mistakes, they're quite close to his
maybe
body.
Maybe he needs to do the David Brent dance.
Also,
get Ricky Gervais to give him training. Go on, do it.
He, Dave. What?
Ricky Gervais. Go on. There you go.
Do I need to do head as well?
Nah.
He went down with a problem. With about 25 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And I think it looked like one of them clear time waste employees. It was like he got the ball in his arms, he went down, he felt up as if I got cramp. He was feeling the back of his hamstring. And I think most people thought, I time wasting here because City are the tempo is too high. Maybe it was. But after we did it, there was a huge reluctance to kick the ball long. Massive. And City realised it. The thing with this United team is, he's their best passer at the back. Bruno Fernandes, obviously. But in terms of distribution defensively, he's their best passer. And it's why they go long so often. Because he's going short. And he's honestly, whichever centre-back he gives it to, while Martinez ain't there, he's a worse passer than him. Genuinely. So he might as well go long because he's the better passer. But after he had that injury problem, he never went long once. He tried to play a pass to Kambwala in the right back position where he had to dink it over someone and he hesitated two or three times before he even did it. I wouldn't be surprised if he's got a problem that needs monitoring. He absolutely did not go long at all. And that was part of United's tactic, was to go long. And I think that's part why then he ended up obviously taking off once Rashford went off as well. I know he wasn't great, goal aside, but you did need that threat maintained. And whatever United were bringing onto the pitch essentially was making them weaker as well. Keep an eye on that on Onana. I think Onana's an interesting one for the running for FPL managers, actually.
Cool. James, tell everybody what we've got left for the rest of the week. I'll tell them about our Patreon and they can get on with their days.
I shall. All so evenings, all nights. The people's poll vote is live till just after 5 o'clock today for tomorrow's podcast that Clayton will be doing with me. There are three options and the voting so far at time recording is very close. There are three options. One is for me and Clayton to pick a combined Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester City 11, which I'm not looking forward to because that would be really tough. Another option is for us to pick our England squad because I'm getting weekly questions. How do we get Foden into the squad and this, or the team and this sort of thing? So discussion on England. The final option is to answer the question, will Pochettino and Ten Hag still be in charge of their clubs next season? That voting is really close at the moment. We've had a little switcheroo where Sky Fantasy Football Podcast is going to be on Thursday this week. Clash of the Correspondences on Wednesday. Bournemouth versus Luton with Neil Grover and Dan Ashby. Friday I'll be streaming. It most likely be 12 o'clock, but I am on dad duty, so that might change on Friday. Our Patreon podcast this week, Surge Q&A today. Tomorrow is, what's tomorrow? UCL Fantasy.
UCL, yeah. Quiz
with me and
week.
Clates. Wednesday will be Tottenham Arse, and we'll obviously discuss Sheffield United and Arsenal's game this evening on that in detail. Thursday is money in football on Wolves' finances, released their financial results last week. And I think they're a really interesting one to cover because we knew they were under restriction.
Correct.
And as much as it's unfair, these points deductions, Wolves have probably managed themselves. Or have they? Because they're hemorrhaging money at the moment. An interesting debate, that one. On Friday will be our Game Week 28 preview podcast. The advanced tier content this week includes the unanswered cues, chip talk on a Game Week 28 wildcard, talking tactics on Ollie Watkins' performance at the weekend, team news stream Friday, and I'm back on Nico's Corner Thursday. And your guest appearance was golden last week.
Was it? It was brilliant. I haven't listened back to it, but if the fans want me back on Nico's Corner, you know what to do. Posting checks for...
Pay me more dollars, more patrons, yeah.
If you want to support the show and if you want to get stuff like Nico's Corner and all the other stuff that James mentioned, patreon.com/planetFPL, as well as the additional content, prize leagues, free access to FPL teams, premium version, Slack community, and a whole bunch of other stuff that's listed on the website, patreon.com/planetFPL. Other than that, though, listeners...
No questions?
No time for questions, James.
Okay, fine.
And also, all they want to know is who's the best doublers.
I'll cover them all for the advanced tiers today.
Well, then you better sign up to advanced tier Patreon if you want that. Stay safe, look after yourselves. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to each other. Play it your way. Cue music, please. Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.